Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, first of all, I wanted to start with this very simple question, which is, are there sections of rap in the show that get stuck in your head in the way that like a normal melody or song would?
Yes.
Because up until the show, I didn't realize that a rap could get stuck in your head, as ignorant as it sounds. I just hadn't had the exposure to it.
Lights up on Washington Heights.
Right.
Up at the break of dawn, I wake up.
Yeah. Nobody sigue, sigue. Welcome, everybody. We're back. It's 2020, and we're back at a musical theater podcast where we discuss the emotional and cultural impact of some of our favorite shows in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Y al frente de mí es la mujer con el espíritu de fuego y la voz del ángel. It's Deborah Cardona.
Hi. ¡Qué lindo!
Hey, gracias.
¡Tus palabras!
I'm so grateful you're here. You are the perfect guest for this show, for In the Heights, which, oh, by the way, shout out to our listener, Sebastian, who requested that we cover In the Heights. So this is for you, buddy.
Hi, Sebastian.
We're covering In the Heights today. And Deborah, you said you've done the show how many times?
5 times.
Oh, my goodness. When was the first?
I did the first regional production back in 2013 at Pioneer Theater Company.
Oh, really?
In Salt Lake City, Utah.
The motherland.
Yes, yes, yes. And our Usnavi was Joseph Morales, who is playing Hamilton on tour right now.
Oh, fantastic.
He was the Hamilton alternate in the Chicago company and then took over, and he's been Hamilton for a few years. Our Sonny was Anthony Ramos.
Oh.
Yes.
How cool.
Anthony Ramos, I think they gave him his equity card doing that show.
Oh, my gosh.
He was amazing. You know, he's a young kid. He's from Brooklyn. he had such joy playing Sonny and so much crazy talent. And I'm so excited to see him play Usnavi in the movie.
Look, maybe we'll talk about the movie, maybe we won't. But the point is, I'm really excited about it because it looks like they did it right.
There's a lot of changes, so I'm a little nervous about it. But I'm really curious to see. And also, I want to see all my friends in it.
Of course. I'm sure. That's so exciting. Okay, so real quick. When I was in Utah, when I was growing up, Pioneer Theater Company would not touch musicals.
What?
Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
They were way too high class to do musical theater. And then that kind of all changed right as I was leaving town. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden they were doing like a musical a season, and now they're doing some really great regional musical theater.
Yeah, I did In the Heights there, and then a few years before I did The Light in the Piazza there.
Oh. Oh, my gosh, right. You played Signora, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Beautiful, cool. Beautiful production.
I'm sure.
And In the Heights did really, really well. We got a lot of young people, and they would come over and over again.
How cool.
You know, and they would wait for us to come out of the stage door.
You played, of course, Abuela.
Abuela. That was my first Abuela. And I did not get into the original production, and I had seen it on Broadway and cried through the whole thing. And I just wanted to do In the Heights so badly. So to be able to do the first regional production and play Abuela was just, it was a dream come
true.
What
a joy.
You know, at the time that I auditioned for the show when it was going off Broadway, I didn't really know anything about it. I knew Chiara's work. I didn't know Lynn's work at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the first, you know, it was his introduction to the world.
Yeah, he like smashed down the door
you
for
know,
his entrance.
And so they gave me, I was auditioning to like cover Abuela and Camila, the mother, you know, but I didn't know anything about the story. So you're kind of auditioning in a vacuum.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I went and saw it after it opened, I went, oh my God. I call it Fiddler on the Roof in Washington Heights.
Absolutely.
Because it's about a community of people. Whereas Fiddler on the Roof is about tradition. Mm-hmm. In the Heights is about home and community. Yes, Fiddler is about community as well, community and tradition. Mm-hmm. And this is community and home, and not necessarily the home where you came from, but the home and the people you choose to make home with.
It's all the people from Fiddler living in Washington Heights.
Yeah. This is a neighborhood of predominantly immigrants from all over the Caribbean and South America and Mexico. It's just a whole bunch of outsiders coming and making a family in this neighborhood. In my neighborhood in Spanish Harlem, you know, because my grandparents had lived there for so many years and my parents grew up there, and then I was born there. I lived there until I was about 7, and then we moved to the Bronx. You know the people in the neighborhood. You know, there was Cuca, who you would go and get the pasteles from and the pastelillos, and she would sell them out of her house. Now, these are meat pies?
Yes, of course.
Fantastic.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and there's nothing like if you know the lady in the neighborhood that makes them from scratch.
She's the hookup.
I mean, you could go to the Comida Criolla place, and it's good and it's fine, but it's like if your aunt makes those, like my aunt would only make pasteles for Christmas.
Right.
Because it's really work intensive, you know.
Yeah, that would be like tamales here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You have to have your hookup for the holidays.
Right.
This is the person you go to and you get 5 dozen of them, and you take them home.
Oh, I love that so
but,
much.
You know, you knew the people in the neighborhood. And look, my neighborhood was not the safest neighborhood in the world, but we all looked out for each other. You know, if something was going down that was not too good, you would get a warning. You know, people would make
You'd
sure that you got escorted home, or everyone in the neighborhood depended on each other. And it is... And that's not just a thing for Washington Heights or Spanish Harlem. It's a universal thing.
Absolutely.
If you grew up in a neighborhood where even several generations of your family have grown up in the neighborhood, that creates a special dynamic. And I think it speaks to everyone.
Oh, I completely agree. The universality of In the Heights is what is enduring about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, representation is amazing, but if it doesn't connect with everyone who isn't necessarily born or look like those people, then I'm not entirely sure it has lasting power. And In the Heights will.
Yes.
Because of this fact. We grow up in maybe a society that continually shows us commercials of how we're supposed to look or, you know, supposed to operate as a family. But when it comes down to it, circumstances don't create home.
Mm-hmm.
What creates home is love and people and looking out for each other,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that's what's so special about
you
this
group.
You
create a family.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why people really respond so positively. The fact that you can put rap in a musical and not necessarily make it a rap musical.
Sure.
It's very traditional.
No, it's incredibly traditional.
Lin-Manuel Miranda is a... You know, he's a musical theater geek. He grew up listening to all these cast albums like I did when I was a kid.
Right.
So, but what I also love about In the Heights is any other musical, and there weren't a lot of musicals about Latin American and Hispanic people. West Side Story is about gangs.
Well,
Zoot Suit is about the Zoot Suit riots. the Cape Man, he was a gang guy. Mm-hmm. It's a negative connotation, and it's not that it's not true. Mm-hmm. There is truth in that, but it's not the only thing that defines us.
Yeah.
You know, just like everybody else who's ever come to the United States, they want a fresh beginning and they want better things for their children.
Absolutely.
So to have a Latinx musical that has nothing to do with violence and gangs made me so happy.
Oh,
and also
sure.
have it be about my experience. It's something that I've never been able to express in a musical.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I do it, I feel like I'm showing the audience who I am,
yeah,
and where I come from. And it's really deep. It makes this musical have such a special place in my heart because I never thought that I'd see anything like it.
Well, it is such a slice of life show. As you know, sweet as the plot is, it's really not about the plot. It is yeah. about this slice of life, seeing these 3 days in yeah. this community's life.
It's 3 days during which everything is going to change. It will never be the same.
Right.
Just like in Fiddler on the Roof, you have 3 days to leave.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. So we started this this whole podcast with an episode about Fiddler on the Roof, and now we're starting our second little season with In the Heights, which is basically Fiddler on the Roof
yes.
in Washington Heights.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think Lin-Manuel Miranda would
I think he'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I think he agrees with that. I think he's spoken about that as well.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Lin. So he went to Wesleyan?
Yeah.
Is that right? Wesleyan College in Connecticut. Was, of course, a huge musical theater nerd. And while he was there, he worked on a show called In the Heights.
Yeah.
And from what I have heard him say, all that is left of that original... that original piece is the words In the Heights.
Yeah, he had done, a weekend production of it
yeah.
at school. They couldn't get, I just read an interview where he said they couldn't get a band because all the good musicians were playing at some sort of music festival.
Oh,
so
no.
He borrowed money and he did a pre-recorded thing and everybody sang to a track and then they recorded it and sold it.
That's so
when they were doing the show
Man.
That weekend so that he could make enough money to pay back the money he had borrowed.
In order to use that
CD somehow fell into Tommy Cale's, the director who wound up directing it years later, his hands. And I think they met after
he graduated. Mm-hmm.
And he approached him about this show and he was like, it should do this and this should be here and the In the Heights numbers, that should be the first one and not the third one. And he was like, what is, you know, and then they brought in another book writer. They
right.
they brought in Kiara Alegría-Hudes.
I think she had, or sorry, Lin had rewrote it several times mm-hmm. and then they brought in Kiara who.
Yeah. I had seen one of her really early plays that a friend of mine directed.
Oh.
And then she had a play called Elliot, A Soldier's Story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was playing in a little off Broadway house, but she was getting a lot of buzz about
yeah.
her.
That was eventually part of a trilogy,
it's a
right?
It's a trilogy. Yes, yeah. yes. I want to do Water by the Spoonful so badly.
Which is what won her the Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful playwright.
Oh, incredible.
And what do you think her main contributions were to it?
She gave it a real form.
Mm.
She really helped give it an arc.
A dial-in.
Yeah. And also, they worked on it for 7 years before it was off-Broadway.
I don't...
Nina had a gay brother who was also in love with Benny.
Whoa.
Yeah, named Lincoln.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and he served as commentary.
Oh.
And then they decided that it really has to be all about Usnavi. It has to be from his point of view.
He's the storyteller.
The bodega is the center.
Mm-hmm. Which is so smart.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody there needs to get their coffee, so they all come in and yeah. see Usnavi
oh,
in the
yeah.
morning.
I no offense to 7-Eleven, but I don't like 7-Eleven. I like my bodega.
Yeah?
I grew up with bodega. Well, because I feel like 7-Eleven never really has what you need. And you don't have a relationship with the people at 7-Eleven like you do at your bodega.
Yeah.
You walk into your corner bodega, they know how you like your coffee. They know what you're looking for. That, you know, mm-hmm. there's always a cat. Also, they stock the specific kinds of foods that the people in the neighborhood are just going to run in and get.
Right. So, because they know the people. It's not about what the corporate sent. It's like actually the things that people are going to buy and eat.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my uncles owned a bodega.
Really?
Yeah.
How cute.
You know, and he never. Now, my uncle, I never heard him speak English.
Really?
Yeah. He always spoke Spanish. You know, his bodega was in the Bronx. Everybody spoke Spanish, so he never really.
No need.
He could understand, but he couldn't have a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I love that line where Nina talks about how she thought the map of the world was the subway map.
Yeah.
And I can just see that when you live in a city like that, and it is essentially the world in this tiny microcosm, you're like, what? Is the world beyond this island? I don't even know.
You kind of, if you, I mean, I'm assuming that the first time Nina leaves that neighborhood is when she goes to Stanford.
That's crazy.
That's hard.
Yeah.
I remember I felt like I had a lot, most in common with Nina when I first saw it, and also Vanessa. Because Vanessa wants to move downtown, which is what I eventually did.
How cute.
Also, in my family, I went to NYU.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that was a
big
deal.
That was huge.
Yeah.
So you have an uncle who doesn't speak any English, and then you went to NYU?
I went to NYU.
That's a big leap.
It's a culture shock. And I'm glad I didn't leave New York. I'm not quite sure how I would have been able to handle it.
Mm.
Yet people leave their homes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But even growing up in New York, to leave New York, it's just as traumatic as, you know,
as the rest of us going there.
Exactly. Exactly. So I can only imagine. Also, you know, when you're the kid that everybody's counting on getting out and doing better and being the big success, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, that's the other thing that I think this show does so beautifully, and why I think it fits so wonderfully in the canon of American musical theater, is that the American immigrant and the first generation children of those immigrants is a very specific type of pressure and experience. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this musical is able to show the varying degrees of what that means in different people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, even if, you know, you grew up in a farm town and you're like, well, I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to move to Seattle, or I'm going to move to Los Angeles, or, you know, or New York. That's huge.
It's
also
huge.
The fact that you're going to be something like a doctor is a huge thing in your community. So mm-hmm. everybody's rooting for you.
Right.
They want you to succeed. Your success reflects well on them.
Mm.
It means that the community did its job.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was a documentary, but there was a guy who became a professional dancer who grew up in the projects. And the interviewer automatically assumed that he was bullied for being a dancer and living in the projects. And he kind of said absolutely not, that everybody else saw the gift and was like, oh, you're going to make it out of here
mm-hmm.
because you've got this skill. And so even if he was kind of a flamboyant boy who loved dancing in kind of a Billy Elliot sort of way,
mm-hmm.
they had his back.
Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think we don't give people enough credit for how they root for each other.
Yeah, yeah. Every success is not just one person by themselves.
Hmm.
It's a whole army of people that has influenced that person's life so that they can get there. It's not just you. You are a conglomeration of the people that came before you and your environment and, you know, the people that encouraged you, the people that didn't encourage you. It's not just in a vacuum.
Mm. I wonder if we more easily forget that in the affluent white community. I don't know. I am grateful because I was raised in the church, which was a very strong community. And so there were leaders and mentors and people surrounding surrounding me who I felt like were rooting for me. And I don't feel like I could have done it without them,
yeah.
including my family. Mm-hmm. But I wonder sometimes if we forget about that privilege.
I think we do as the generations kind of go on and you take for granted what your grandparents had to go through
sure.
so that you could have that.
Yeah.
You just forget unless you have to go through it yourself.
Mm. Going back to kind of the history of the show, mm-hmm. so Tommy, Kale signs on, they get Kiara.
Yeah, Alex Lacamoire is so
musical
brilliant.
Director.
Yeah.
And obviously, these are all new voices
yes.
to Broadway.
Yes.
Which means that it didn't start out on Broadway. It had its big professional premiere off Broadway.
Yes, and it had been workshopped for 7 years.
I don't think people realize how long it takes to get
yeah.
a musical up and going. You know, you're playing the long game when you write a musical nowadays. 7 years is probably standard.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, it's based on a catalog of previously known material or
yeah.
something. This is a completely original musical
yeah.
that's not based on a movie. It's not based on
yeah.
a book. It's not based on songs that people had heard before. It's really an anomaly in,
yeah.
in modern musical theater.
Yeah.
So it's off Broadway. It runs for like 4 months.
Yeah. And then it goes right to
and
Broadway.
Then it goes, and then, I mean, it's so innovative and yet traditional in its structure and in its themes and universal message mm-hmm. that it really does just kind of get greenlit and goes straight to Broadway.
Yeah. And wins the Tony for Best Musical.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw it when it was at 39 Arts off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in and for those who have never seen a production of it, the George Washington Bridge is a big part of the set. It's in the background and then it's all the tenement buildings. You know, in the foreground. And I loved, first of all, knowing Washington Heights and walking in there and seeing the GWB there. I went, oh, my goodness. You know, there's a huge recognition and you're like, oh, I know this. I know this.
This is,
I know
this
what this
people.
Corner is. Blah, blah, blah. And as people came in and if they were from Washington Heights, they freaked out
oh.
when they saw the set. And, you know, everybody starts feeling proud and,
oh.
you know, and they're so ready for whatever is going to happen because they don't know.
Sure.
You know, I was not prepared to cry as much as I did.
That's the best kind of crying.
But I just loved watching these people's story.
Let's talk about the story. It begins with Graffiti Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a street artist, has his, you know, spray cans doing, you know, street art graffiti. And he's trying to tag the bodega.
Yeah.
At which point we meet Usnavi, who was originally played by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who also, you know, was the composer.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out and chases him away. And then Usnavi begins to tell us where we are,
mm-hmm.
which is Washington Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know New York, can you explain a little bit where Washington Heights is?
Okay. Washington Heights is where they specifically are. I think the bodega is on 183rd Street, or as we say, 183rd. But Washington Heights is like 181st Street up to like 196.
So uptown.
Yeah, it's Upper Manhattan. It's a couple of blocks. It goes like from Broadway to the Hudson River.
Okay.
You know, it's high ground. There are hills. It was, there's at the very, very top edge on the northwest edge, there's like trees that have been there for hundreds of years. It's like the oldest, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Alexander Hamilton had his house there.
Wow.
In Hamilton Heights.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
My gosh, talk about.
Yeah, there were people that had back in Revolutionary War times had their estates up there.
Wow.
But you could get a big apartment really cheaply there. You would take the one train or the A train. The A train was the express. The subway station at 181st Street is so deep underground, you have to take an elevator to get to the...
Really? To
yeah.
the actual
yeah.
track or
well,
the platform?
Well, no, to get up to the
Oh,
street.
To the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa,
yeah.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, yeah. Also, there is a noise level. You hit Broadway and it's like, ah!
Just you know, a it's constant
all
hum.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, all the neighborhood people. A Bidagua guy, you know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people call shaved ice.
Yeah.
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 It's a cart. You have a big block of ice. There's this metal thing that you use that you shave the ice with. You put it in a cone and you put a little syrup on it. It could be strawberry or grape or lemon, you know, cherry. And I grew up with that. And then there was also coco helado, which is like Italian ice, but coconut.
Mm. See, now the time that I've spent with the Latino community was on my mission. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's now become like a running joke on my podcast. How many times am I going to bring up my mission for my church or she loves me? And now I've already done both. But when the piragua guy in Texas, specifically among the Mexican community, would put pickle juice, that was like all of the kids' favorite, more than strawberry, whatever,
wow.
was pickle juice. They loved that.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. You know, I had one of the most interesting ice creams I've ever had was peanut butter and pickle.
Stop it.
I am at a place called Scoops over in Chinatown.
Yes.
But they change it all the time, so I've never had it again. Yeah, I had a little taste of it. I was like, peanut butter and pickle, how is that going to work? And I tasted it and went, okay, I need 2 scoops of that, please.
I don't feel like I'm very bougie, but when it comes to artisanal ice creams, sign me up. I want the botanicals. I want something that's called chrysanthemum jalapeno. Like, I don't care. Give me all of the weird flavors.
Yeah.
Okay, so Usnavi is introducing everybody. We meet the piragua guy who we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. We meet Sunny, who is his
cousin,
right?
Yeah.
And they both work at the bodega. The bodega is Usnavi's, but Sunny works there. Usnavi is like convinced that he's lazy, but he's not really.
No.
He's just kind of hard on him.
He's a sharp kid,
yeah.
Sonny.
One
he's
going to
be a community leader.
One of my favorite characters in the whole piece is Sonny. He's so fantastic. We meet Abuela, mm-hmm. who's not really his abuela.
No.
Usnavi's parents passed away. Do we know how they died?
They got sick, but it's never explained how they got sick and what exactly they died from. So he's a guy in his mid-20s who's running the family business.
Right. And Abuela has kind of raised him as her own.
As amongst other kids in the community. And it's funny, I've talked to a lot of people after the shows that said, oh, I had somebody in my neighborhood just like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is the person that, you know, she has been there like the longest.
Yes.
Everybody knows who she is. She's a big ball of love. She is an important part of the family of the community.
One of the reasons why I love my Latino brothers and sisters so much is because it is kind of matriarchal, as, you know, machismo as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much respect for women.
Yeah.
And you can see that in Abuela. Everybody loves her and she's kind of in charge.
Oh, yeah. My grandmother was the head of our family.
Right.
And also on both sides of my family.
Yeah.
We would go to my grandmother's house every Sunday.
Really?
Like yes. Clockwork. Now my mother's one of 9 girls.
Oh, my gosh.
So
what a house.
My grandmother's house would be full of screaming, running children. We would run around in our underwear in the summer because it was too hot.
So
I mean, there's
hot.
No air conditioning.
Well, that is kind of a big plot point in the Heights is that it's just so freaking hot.
Yeah. It's the hottest weekend of the summer and it's the 4th of July.
Right.
You know, the birthday of America. Very important.
Yes, incredibly symbolic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it forces everyone to be outside. Mm-hmm. You know, when we have our air conditioning, nobody goes outside. But if you don't have air conditioning.
I did not grow up with air conditioning.
It
was hot.
You're just in your shorts.
When I would
shorts.
Stay at my grandmother's house, she would put us out to sleep on the fire escape.
No way. Like rear window, I would think of rear window. That's really cute.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, there was a lady on my mission who was kind of an abuela,
mm-hmm.
and she taught me, paciencia y amor para que todo sea mejor.
That's what she would always... Oh, I love
isn't
that!
Isn't that so sweet? She would always say that, and so I think of her every time I listen to In the Heights, which is patience and love makes everything better.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved her so much. And she taught me how to make tortillas and it's just such a sweet, wonderful
that's
woman.
That's beautiful.
Okay, then we also meet Nina and her family.
Yeah.
The Rosarios, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Rosarios. Camila and Kevin.
Camila and Kevin. And Kevin owns a limo service.
Yeah.
Or like a car service.
Yeah, car service.
And his wife, Camila, is also, like you said, kind of the one in charge even though.
Yeah, because let me tell you something about cabs above 96th Street. They don't really happen.
Oh, really?
So there are people driving around, and there were, before Lyft and Uber, mm-hmm. there were people either driving around in their own cars, cruising the street trying to, you know, if you needed a ride. Because taxis didn't want to go to those neighborhoods.
Oh, wow. I didn't think that was the reason.
Oh, that's the reason.
Wow.
And so you would call a car service to take you, you know, downtown or wherever you needed to be, or the Bronx or whatever, because you couldn't flag down a cab on the street.
See, these are things that I just assume but never think why. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, yeah, he has like a car service. Awesome.
Yeah.
But like, why does he have a car service? Because the taxis won't go there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's built-in business from the entire community.
Wow. And then Nina is their daughter who has gone away to college.
Yes, Stanford.
To Stanford. And we find out that she is coming back, and they're very excited about this little reunion. Then we also meet the ladies at the beauty shop.
Daniela and Carla.
Also some of my favorites. And Daniela owns the shop, right? Carla is kind of her little assistant, apprentice. And then Vanessa, who also works at the
salon.
Shop.
Yeah.
And Vanessa is the resident hottie of the community. And Usnavi has a big crush on her, but can't bring himself to talk to her. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Are there any other members of the community that we haven't necessarily?
Did we meet Benny?
Oh, and then Benny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who's Benny?
Benny works for Kevin Rosario.
In the car company.
In the car company. He is African-American.
Yeah, he's not Latino, and it's actually kind of a sticky situation.
It's a big situation. He also is in love with Nina. Mm. And during the course of the show, Nina falls in love with him. And it
Very
does not
fiddler.
Go well with her father, who wants her to find somebody better.
Someone who doesn't work for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see how that would be triggering in many ways.
You know, I'm sure he wants her to meet, like, some dude at Stanford.
Yeah, who
has... Some professional guy and...
With a degree and...
Yeah, and get out of there.
Yeah.
So it's a huge sticking point.
I mean, either way, it's about tradition.
Yeah.
Whether it's I want somebody from my culture marrying my daughter or somebody who's not from here marrying my daughter.
Yeah, he's going to find a laser wolf for her.
Yeah, you know?
But she wants to marry Muddle.
Exactly. Okay, so then Nina arrives. Now, one of my friends, Carlos Mendoza, he has directed In the Heights a lot and brings up this funny point, which is if Kevin owns a car service, why didn't they pick her up from the airport? Why did she have to be in charge of getting herself
back? She took the red eye.
Oh, is that what it was?
They said she got in at 3 a.m. last night.
Oh, okay. Like, so
now
it was. You're like, well, I
or
have all of these cars at my disposal. Yeah. Someone get on the dispatch and get someone to go pick up Nina.
There are many questions.
Absolutely.
I have many questions. So, you know, I was like, well.
And that is kind of fun to sit back and be like, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Nina comes back and we find out that she has basically had to drop out.
Yeah.
She had a scholarship to Stanford. She got put on academic probation because she was working two jobs on top of, you know, she had the scholarship. Her parents are working, you know, crazy amounts of hours to make sure that she can go to college. But then also there's the expenses of books and things that the scholarships don't cover. And so she's working two jobs, falling behind in the schoolwork. Gets put on probation and then ultimately goes on a leave of absence. Mm-hmm. And like you said, one of the things she's not looking forward to about this return home is that she has to tell her family what's going on.
Yeah.
Because she hasn't. She hasn't been upfront with them, which I think is, you know, in the traditional way of the family. Like, if you had just been honest with me. But with all of the sacrifices that they had made, she just couldn't disappoint everybody like that.
She's not only disappointing her parents, but everybody in the neighborhood.
The whole community.
I mean, there's that Breathe song that she sings, that my first big crying when I saw it. You know, about being the hope of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then the women in the neighborhood are singing Nina, you know, no te preocupa por ella. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about her.
Mm-hmm.
She's our star.
Yeah.
And she's got to come dragging her feet home going, I failed.
Yeah.
I crashed and burned and I can't do this.
Talking a little bit about the score, I love that right from the get-go, we start out with the rap. You know, like you said, lights up on Washington Heights up. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine what it would be like for a more traditional musical theater crowd that's never experienced music like this to sit and, you know, suddenly be thrust into this world with this type of music. And then Lin-Manuel does something so smart, which is within the first 3 minutes of his rap, he drops both Duke Ellington mm-hmm. and Cole Porter. Mm-hmm. And I think in a subconscious sort of way says, we're going to be okay. You're going to be okay, even if you're not used to this type of music. I respect this art form, and this is going to feel much more familiar than you might think it is. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I find it so generous.
Yeah. And also, he starts off easy. As you get in, mm-hmm. you know.
Then it starts spitting.
It'll get faster, but in the beginning, he lets you in easy.
Mm-hmm.
You understand everything.
And do you know what? It also brings up an interesting challenge, I think, for directors and or choreographers as rap becomes more integrated into musical theater. You've got these words that are coming out, so much information at such a quick pace. Mm-hmm. How much of it do you stage? What things do you need to point out so that the audience hears specific information? It's a really fun, interesting problem to solve.
I love how everybody gets into it's like tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the neighborhood gets introduced. They all come out and they do a little thing and they move on to start their day.
Yeah.
And everybody in the neighborhood comes in and buys stuff right at the bodega.
Right.
It's so beautifully constructed. What always blows me my mind, because there are epic numbers, 96,000.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. The blackout.
Yeah.
There are so many vocal lines that if you listen to the recording 500,000 times,
you could still hear something new.
You will hear something new.
Absolutely.
I kept hearing new because I didn't, you know, when the first time you do the show, you're just worried about, like, when you come in. You're just worried about your line, and that is it. Especially if you're, like, Danielle's hers is in really fast Spanish.
Mm.
Really fast Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rhythms and the melodies and you know, there's, like, six of them at the same time, and they all join beautifully together. It's amazing to me.
And then what's so great about the just kind of the flow of the show is that right out of this opener, like you said, comes Breathe, which I think is one of the most beautiful I want songs of the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And so character driven, but also gloriously sung and just gives you chills, you know, listening to a song like that. So the combination of innovation in this show, along with familiarity, I think is just...
Yeah.
It's just so
I think in the
beautiful.
First half hour of the show, you find out what every single person in this show wants.
Mm.
You know, because Vanessa has her I Want song.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite lyrics is Vanessa's, who, for those who are following along, the crush of Usnavi.
Mm-hmm.
In her song, It Won't Be Long Now, it's one of my favorite lyrics and one of my favorite parts of her character. She's talking about how the guys check her out as she walks down the street, and she says, their machismo pride doesn't break my stride, and that they're like whistling at her because they've got nothing good to say or nothing else to say.
Yeah.
And that whole verse is so indicative of girls that I know who are my friends, and I have never heard it in musical theater before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these girls who are beautiful and in musical theater, you know, when a girl gets whistled at, she usually, like, makes a squeaky noise and, you know, has a blonde wig. But, like, this girl wants something more than that.
Yeah.
And it's so refreshing. And I love that about her character.
Yeah.
Let's see, what happens next? Oh, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the car service and Kevin. Mm-hmm. He sings a song called Inutil, mm-hmm. which means...
useless.
Yeah, that's kind of how he feels mm-hmm. because he's having business troubles, financial problems. And when, as a man, when you feel like you can't take care of your family from a financial place, it's like, where's my worth?
Yeah.
You know? How was your experience with your father in terms of... what you feel like his pressures were?
Yeah, well, my father passed away when I was a baby. So my stepfather is the one. Now, he was an artist.
Was he really?
Yeah,
wow, how unique.
Yeah. He was Japanese and Irish.
Oh, wow.
His name was Drake Shigasaki.
Yes. I'm officially obsessed with your childhood. With your grandma with 9 daughters and then your Irish Japanese father who's an artist.
Yeah, yeah. So he was a commercial artist. He would retouch photos for magazines by hand, you know, before Photoshop. But he would come home and paint at night. Oh, so I owe him my artistic life because the day I said I want to be an actress, it was like, okay.
Of course you
do. Let's find you an acting class. But also, you know, it's hard because I went to NYU. My 2 younger sisters went to community college.
Wow.
Because they were afraid to put my parents under that much financial strain. They did not want to do that to them.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
My parents helped me out the first 2 years and I said, okay, I'm going to do the rest myself. And that was not, I almost flunked out like Nina.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. You don't want to do that to your parents.
Of course.
You don't want them to get into so much debt. You don't want them to do without everything, you know, mm-hmm. to give you a life.
Yeah.
You know, though, you do that for your family, and you know.
Absolutely.
But you want your children to have more than you did. You are doing this and running this cab company. So, you know, Kevin's running this cab company so that his daughter could have something different.
And then
she comes back
not...
and says, I can't because I couldn't afford the book. So I had to have it, you know, and that's because I couldn't give that to you.
Yeah. He takes it on.
It's universal.
Yeah.
I mean, all my friends are now trying to figure out how they're going to pay back those loans, sending their kids to, like, my kid wanted to go to Carnegie Mellon, so mm-hmm. I'm going to do what I can. How are you going to? It's hard.
Yeah.
Everybody sacrifices something for their children or, for, you know, for their family.
Yeah. I remember I had a therapist once say that the only real sacrifice is parenthood.
Uh-huh.
Because
it's not about you.
It's just not. One of the things that that we discover kind of early on is that at the bodega you can also buy lottery tickets.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Lottery tickets. Liquor stores and bodegas, they do great business in lottery. They sell so many lottery tickets.
And
you know, that's a big thing. You feel like I'm never gonna make enough money to get out of here. So
right.
The only way I'm gonna do it is by playing the lotto.
Is by hitting the jackpot.
Yeah.
And then...
play the numbers.
As it just so happens, Usnavi finds out that there's a winning lotto ticket from his bodega.
Yeah, yeah. The Take 5 lotto. $96,000.
So that means that there's $96,000 mm-hmm. that someone has just won and they don't know who it is.
Yeah.
So then this number begins. And when I first heard this cast album, 96,000 was the song that I sent to all of my brothers-in-law who didn't know that musical theater could sound like this. And I was like, okay, listen to this. You might like this.
Yeah.
Because it's so thrilling. And like you said, fresh and layered and intricate.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody imagining what they would do if they had $96,000.
Yes. And Sonny's rap.
Oh, so great.
Oh, that's how you know. You're like, this guy has got so much going for him, and Usnavi doesn't give him the credit.
Right. Right. You're so right. Oh, that's another, in this song is another one of those rap moments where I would always get stuck in my head. The, oh no, here goes Mr. Braggadocio. That always got stuck in my head. After 96,000, we discovered that the winning lottery ticket belongs to
Abuela Claudia.
Yes.
I hope I'm not spoiling this for everybody.
No. We should know by now. Yeah, we're going through the plot.
Abuela Claudia has won the ticket. She hasn't told anybody yet. She goes, you know, she's in a fog.
Yeah.
Because what do you do with that information? You've spent your whole life, you know, cleaning people's houses and, you know, helping take care of kids in the neighborhood and, you know, just eking out your living.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this big win. Now, $96,000 in 2020 money isn't much.
Yeah.
But
it's more than
it's still a lot. If I won $96,000, it would be a life changer for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of it's not the mega millions.
Sure.
But it's enough.
Yeah.
To change things.
It's enough to change things, but not ruin things.
Yeah. And
you
then
know?
we find out who she is and where she's from and what her life was. You know, she was born in Cuba. She came here in the early 1940s. Her mother, I guess there was no father in the picture, and they were starving, and her mother brought her to New York, and they cleaned houses together. And all through her life, her mother would tell her, paciencia y fe, have patience and faith. You know, and she has all, that has been her mantra. She tells everybody that. And now it's, it has, you know, this the patience, having patience and faith truly has paid off. You know, and even if she didn't win this money, her life would be full.
It would be full.
Because
yeah.
she's in a, you know, she's a beloved part. She has a family, you know, even though her mother's gone and she doesn't have a family of her own, her family is that community and they
right.
adore her. It's an epic song,
yeah.
you know, it's a long
Tour
song
de force.
To sing, but it's so much fun to do.
Mm.
And when she, you don't know that she's won the lottery until like the last 16 bars of the
That's what she's been singing about this whole time.
Pulls out, what do I, and she says, what do I do with this winning ticket? And to hear the audience go, every night is so much fun.
Oh, what a great reveal.
You know, because if you haven't seen the show before, you're not knowing that that's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
you're like,
why is she singing this long song about her life?
Right.
What's going on with her? And then you find out what's going on.
And she decides that with the money, she's going to split it into thirds.
Thirds, yeah. A third for her, a third for Asnavi, and a third for Sunny.
How cool is that?
How beautiful.
Now, in the meantime, Sunny has asked Vanessa out for Usnavi.
Yes.
And because Usnavi doesn't have, you know, the guts to do it. So they decide that they're going to go out dancing in the club.
Mm-hmm.
That is why they're all going to the club.
Mm-hmm.
Benny and Nina have kind of revealed their love to her parents who have...
Actually, that hasn't really happened yet. There's a dinner at their house before they go dancing.
Okay. But there is a fight. And what is the fight then if it's not about their romance?
It's because Kevin announces that he has sold
That's right.
the car service to this company for not nearly enough money because they mention, Camila mentions, oh yeah, you know, Uptown Investments, another offer, it's nothing.
Right.
You know, but
in order to pay for Nina's schooling.
Yes. So once he finds out, once after he's sung Inutil. He has, you know, and he couldn't get another loan.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Uptown Investments and cuts a deal with them. So he makes, and he's so proud. He goes, now you can go back to school. It's all taken care of. And everybody freaks out
right.
because all those drivers
mm-hmm.
have just lost their job. Benny has just lost his job. Nina and Camila, Nina's like, please don't do this. Don't
right.
do this.
Even more pressure.
And Camila
on
was
her
like,
now.
What are we going to do? What are we going to have now? And he's like, well, I'll go back to fixing cars. You know, that blows up the dinner party. You know, everybody runs out because it becomes a fight.
Right.
And so Benny and Nina have this fight at the club.
At the club. Because he's, been, you know,
yeah.
going to get wasted essentially
yeah.
to deal with
yeah.
this bad news.
Yeah, you
That's
know,
right.
and basically calls her a princess and your daddy's going to take care of you, but I don't have
a
job.
What about me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now they're all kind of at this club And the heat in the city has become so bad and overwhelmed the power that there's a huge blackout.
Blackout? Well, they have blackouts here.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But I have lived through several massive blackouts.
Like mega blackouts?
Yes, yes. You know, where, you know, the power would be out for several days.
Oof. And then everybody just gets the meat out of the...
Everything goes bad in your refrigerator.
Exactly.
That means in New
York...
Block
party.
Block party. Also, it means that, you know, your food goes bad in your refrigerator. You can't take the subway.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even think
about
subway.
You can't get on the bus because there's no traffic lights.
Right.
You can't
everything
get
shuts
anything
down.
Done. You can't go to work. You can't, you know, I remember after Superstorm Sandy, we didn't have power for about 4 or 5 days and we didn't have heat for about 14 days.
Oh.
And I was temping in Midtown and I would take all my electronics. My husband and I would take our electronics. We'd go up to where I was temping and they said you could take a shower there. We would plug in all our electronics and juice them up and then... Darren would go back home with all the electronics and I would work and, you know, and you would walk. It took me like over an hour to walk, you know. So these are the things you have to deal with when there's a blackout. Also, what happens is there's some looting that happens. People break store windows and grab things.
Which is one of the problems of the bodega.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, some people come in and they break into, they can't get the grate, the little metal grate. That he's having problems getting it to come back down.
Right.
And, you know, Sonny is minding the store with Graffiti Pete, who is also very underestimated.
It's true. Undervalued member of the community.
Yes, yes, yes. Because Usnavi thinks he's a bad influence on Sonny. And then you find out later that is not the case.
That's not the case.
They're really cool people.
This blackout number, after doing the Rent episode that I did earlier, late last year, I went in this deep dive of Jonathan Larson. And then after that, revisiting In the Heights, I was all of a sudden very aware of how much Jonathan Larson influence there is in this show, particularly in Blackout. I feel like Christmas Bells and Blackout have a lot of similarities. And even the champagne number between Vanessa and Usnavi at the end of the second act has a lot of similarities with Light My Candle.
Yeah.
And then to find out that what a big influence Rent was for Lin-Manuel.
Yeah, and Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah, yeah. And now he's making a, you know, film version of Tick, Tick, Boom. So I really see him keeping the Jonathan Larson spirit alive with this show as well.
Yeah.
So Blackout happens. Benny and Nina make up. We check in on Abuela, who is, you know, looking at the stars, everyone.
And she reveals to Usnavi that she's got a big bag of cash. That's another one of my questions. How does she get that bag of cash?
Hey, that's a good point.
You know? I was like, doesn't it take a few days to get the check? We've messed with, you know.
A little bit of time.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's much more fun to carry around a bag full of cash than a check.
Who needs one of those bag checks?
You know, you've got to protect the money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, this blackout, even though we have the awesome fireworks from the 4th of July and everything, lasts for longer than we would like. Lasts for a couple of days, correct?
But it also, Nina and Benny finally...
Oh, they kiss with the firework.
Yes. Oh.
So sweet.
The reaction during the student matinees.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh,
the
crazy,
kids
crazy.
Love it. I would love to watch the show with a student matinee.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Oh. Okay. So Benny and Nina spend the night together. The next morning, now we're in... Are we in Act 2 now?
We're in Act 2.
Great. Moving right along. Everybody's kind of outside because of this blackout.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about Act 2? Do you like Act 2?
I love Act 2.
Okay. So
well,
you should talk about it a little
very,
bit.
The beginning is very, first of all, it's a love song.
Yes.
And
the
Nina
sunrise.
Teaching Benny. Yes. And it's just, you know, after all this craziness and loud and cacophony and everybody singing over each other, then there's this beautiful, this dawn that breaks that's alternately beautiful and heartbreaking. You know, the two, Nina and Benny have found each other. They've spent the night together. She's teaching him Spanish. Mm-hmm. But then downstairs, they're on the fire escape, just like West Side Story. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, Usnavi's got to clean up the mess from his bodega.
From the looting.
Vanessa is really pissed at him because
he didn't really deliver on the date.
No, well, he didn't find her. Like, he was looking for her, but she doesn't know that.
Right.
And then he had to leave because of the store, and he had to check on Abuela. And so she feels like he just abandoned her.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
He's not, you know.
He's not interested.
He didn't think of her.
Right.
Kevin and Camila are looking for their daughter because they don't know where she is.
Right. She didn't come home.
Yeah. So alongside this beautiful love moment, there's this horrible disappointment and sadness and
contrast. Yeah.
Yeah. But then
Carnival,
my favorite number.
Is it?
I love that number.
It's so fun. And it's such a great moment for Daniela, the owner of the
salon. Because she, you know, the last day of her salon has been kind of destroyed because she has to move to the Bronx because she's been gentrified out. You know, her rent has been raised.
The idea of gentrification is something that my generation, I think, both celebrates and rolls our eyes at the same time.
You know, gentrification is a two-edged sword. You're so excited that a Starbucks has finally moved into your neighborhood, but then you know that within 5 years, that means you're not going to be able to afford to live there. So it's almost like the Starbucks moving in is telling the people that have been in the neighborhood for years and years, this is too nice for you. You have to leave.
So it's where does everybody go?
Look, I grew up in New York. And when I was going to college in the late 1970s, I am really old.
Wow.
which is why I always play abuela. But you could get a 3-year lease easily. It used to be you could get more than that. You could pick a neighborhood, start knocking on doors, and in a day or two, you could find an apartment. You know,
you would knock on doors to find an apartment?
Yeah, and talk to the superintendents, you know, make a deal with them, maybe pay them off a little, and you had a place to stay.
Wow.
And by 1980, all of that was gone.
Really?
You know, in order to get a cheap apartment, everybody wanted a studio. Well, once realtors found out that everybody wanted a studio, the prices of studios started going up. Like within a few years, all of a sudden, all the rents doubled.
That's so fascinating.
You know, and, you know, over the years, you start getting more people coming into New York from all over the world. They had already been doing that, but I mean, serious money coming in. Investing in real estate, investing in apartments that people didn't necessarily live in.
Yeah.
And this is a big thing that we're talking about in the Heights.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know?
An ever-changing landscape and one where you don't know if it means that your home is where you live.
Exactly. So they are not only celebrating the 4th of July, but it's really hot. There's no power. You know, we're powerless.
Yeah. In every sense of the word.
In every sense of the word. And she was like, you know what? We're going to make this a party. It's the 4th of July. And then the culmination of that is Usnavi's announcing that Abuela Claudia won the lotto.
Yes. So much to celebrate
until at the end of that, Nina runs down, tells something to Usnavi. They run into the building and you find out Kevin comes out and announces that Abuela Claudia has died. From the heat.
She was not great at taking her medications.
No, she
was. Because it would give her headaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that combined with the heat, which is a very real thing. We lose so many elderly people in blackouts, whether it's in the winter or the summer.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, the temperatures.
Exactly.
So, yeah, she unfortunately has passed, which is such a huge blow to the community.
Oh, my gosh. And they sing this beautiful alabanza song.
Alabanza meaning like praise.
Yeah, praise to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they go and they leave things on her stoop, you know, candles and little mementos and little pictures and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just another, like, ugly crying.
Of course.
Lots of ugly crying. You know, and then the song afterwards, All That I Know, where Nina and Usnavi go through Abuela's pictures and things, and they reminisce about what an impact she's had on their lives.
And it's a real moment for Nina, who realizes that, kind of what we were talking about earlier, that her education began with Abuela. It's not just about her. It's this is about carrying on the legacy of so many people, which means that now she's going to take a humble piece of pie and take the money from her dad and try and go back to school.
Yeah. You know, which is so great, you know, and she is determined to succeed. She knows what it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She knows what she has to do. It's important because you don't always come back from a blow like that.
No, no, absolutely not. And to have so many blows in a row. That's why I said a humble piece of pie, because you really do have to have a moment within yourself of being, okay, this is up to me. Mm-hmm. It's not up to all of this crap that's surrounding me.
Yeah. So she goes, things wrap up pretty quickly because Usnavi and Abuela Claudia, before she died, they have this song about how they're going to go to Dominican Republic.
Back home, yes.
Now, she can't go back to Cuba, but she's going to go, you know.
To where Usnavi is.
Yeah.
And I think that that's it's so beautiful because they're talking about going back home. Mm-hmm. Ignoring the fact that where they are might already be home.
Be home, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's what they're going to use their money for. They're going to get out of Washington Heights, go home. Mm-hmm. And Usnavi decides that he, you know, wants to continue that for himself because Vanessa is going to be moving away anyway. The salon is closing. Yeah. Everything seems to be changing.
Yeah.
So might as well just go along with it.
Yeah, but Sonny is not up with that idea.
Sonny is not. And then this is when he and Graffiti Pete really do show their true colors.
Yes.
Because Usnavi comes to, you know, essentially say goodbye. And there's a little surprise where Sonny finally gets the grate down and Graffiti Pete has created this beautiful memorial to Abuela.
Yes. You know, and that is a thing because it's a spray painted mural of Abuela's face and it says Paciencia y Fe.
Which is her beautiful.
Now, this is a thing that in my neighborhood on the Lower East Side, there are memorials like that. Up on, I don't know how they got, sometimes all the way up on the side of a building. It was like, how did you get up there to do that? Beautiful. You know, you may not know who that person was, but that person was very important to the artist or the people in the neighborhood. And so there is this beautiful spray painted mural on the sides of buildings for people.
And
there's
one
in my neighborhood for Robin Williams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's one just a couple of blocks away from me. So that is a thing. You know, and you see that Graffiti Pete is an artist. I love that. Sonny says you have to commission an artist when the price is still low.
Yes. but he is giving back to his community in the way that all of them have been contributing all this time.
Yeah.
And it's a game changer for Usnavi.
Yeah.
He sees this and realizes maybe I am home.
Yeah. He decides, that's my flight. I'm not going. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay here. Vanessa, even though she's moving downtown,
she's made a train ride away
with Usnavi, and they're going to be a thing.
Yeah, he's going to stand up for himself and have a second date, and be the storyteller of the street.
Yeah, and Nina's going back to Stanford, and Benny is backing that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a beautiful song that he sings to her at the end, you know, and he tells her that he believes in her. And, like, he will try to make his way out there, but he is going to back her all the way.
Yeah.
And he tells her how much potential she has and how special she is. And her success is his dream, too. And it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, and expresses his love. And it's really lovely. So everything is, like, really coming together in an incredible way.
And like you said, this area will never be the same again after these 3 days.
No.
Not necessarily for the better, because, of course, there's the heartbreak of losing Abuela. There's the heartbreak of gentrification in a way. The salon is gone. The car service is gone. But there is this flame of hope.
Yeah. And also, Usnavi is like the community memory.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to be the collective.
Yeah.
The collective memory.
Yeah, he's the key to what was and where this community has come from. All these people that were a core group of people are all going away.
Yeah.
And, you know, Usnavi could just lock up the bodega and say, I'm out too.
Right.
But the fact that he says, wait a minute, what am I talking about? This is home.
This is home.
I'm home.
And every great American musical has a sense of hope about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily optimistic, but hope. And I read a review of In the Heights when it first came out that talked about it being the first great musical of the Obama era.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so interesting because Obama, for so many people, represented
kind of
a musical of politics, a sense of hope that maybe things could be different. And I think that the hope of In the Heights is what makes it so moving to me,
mm-hmm.
and that sense of family. It's something that will continue on.
Yeah.
I think people could very, not easily, but very misguidedly say that In the Heights just served as laying the groundwork for Hamilton, and it is not.
No.
It's a beautiful piece unto itself.
Yeah.
And one that, because it's traditional enough to be performed in high schools and community theaters, has had a huge outreach and influence on our culture.
Yeah.
When these stories get to be shared to more people, their influence is wider and greater.
People want to see these stories. Productions of In the Heights have always done incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to somebody who ran a theater and suggesting In the Heights, and at the time they were like, no, that's not going to play here. And then Hamilton opened and it was such a big hit. They're like, you know what?
Maybe we should do In the Heights.
And it was the best-selling thing they had.
Wow. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta give your audiences the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're better than you think they are.
Yeah.
I know you have to go, but really quickly, you were in On Your Feet, the Gloria Estefan musical.
Yes, the Gloria Estefan musical. I also played Gloria Estefan's abuela.
She's got all the abuelas. Now, were you ever able to meet Gloria?
Yes. Gloria and Emilio are very hands-on with this piece.
Uh-huh.
If you auditioned for the show and you were being considered seriously for a role, they had to give the final say.
Oh, my gosh.
When I auditioned, I got word back that the creative team liked me, but it was up to Gloria and Emilio. They said yes. And then I finally got to meet them when we opened at the Pantages.
Here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. They're so nice.
Oh, that's so cool.
They were so nice. And so, like, Emilio still has his, like, heavy accent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then he still gets words mixed up. And there's this whole thing that there's a whole joke, you know, that everybody knows between them that, you know, she's always correcting his English.
Translating.
So we took pictures and he said to his assistant, okay, we have to put it on internet. And Gloria said, Emilio, Instagram.
Yes. Get it right, hubby.
I laughed so hard. I thought, oh my God, it really is that whole dynamic between the two of them. But they're very open-hearted. And they were able to cross over from the Spanish language market into the American pop market. And then they kept the door open and they helped other people.
Absolutely.
Shakira and Mark Anthony.
Ricky Martin. Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
I bring them up because I think they are in many ways tied to In the Heights. I'm a white farm boy from Utah. And when I heard Conga, it changed my life. And Gloria Estefan's Greatest Hits was the first CD I ever bought with my own money. And then by the late 90s, you know, the influence in music was just undeniable. And that door was busted open by Gloria and Emilio.
It was amazing what they did.
And so I love that has continued on into the musical theater tradition.
In our tour, 5 of the 10 musicians were original Miami Sound Machine.
Stop it. Oh, yeah. Pass out right now. That's so cool.
The sound was amazing.
I'm sure it was just like a concert. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was just, there would be as much dancing off stage in the wings as there was on stage.
Oh, what a great, like, thing to be, what a great energy to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Cardona, I know you have to go, but thank you so much for coming and discussing In the Heights.
Thank you so much for asking me. This show has a big part of my heart, so thank you. Thank you for having this conversation with me.
Of course, and thank you, Lin-Manuel, and everybody who made it happen, for all of those who keep sharing our stories. Paciencia y fe.
Paciencia y fe.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.